This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com. Cleveland, Ohio will be the site of the upcoming Republican National Convention, and in anticipation of large masses of people coming together in a politically polarized and highly charged atmosphere, the city has banned the carrying of all types of weaponry, including knives, axes, and even fake guns, around the area of the convention. But Cleveland is located within a state with some of the least restrictive gun laws in the nation. Ohio is one of those states that allows practically anyone over the age of 18 to buy as many guns as they want. So, Cleveland, in anticipation of potential violence, is sensibly banning all weapons near the convention, except one of the most dangerous, compact, and portable weapons, guns, because of the state's insane gun laws. By the logic of gun rights activists, the more weapons there are floating in society, the safer we are all. Why then should any weapon be banned? Well, the myth that guns make people safer is repeated so often by gun proliferation advocates that they've permeated our culture. My guest, Dennis Hennigan, took on these and other myths in his 2009 book, Lethal Logic. That book has just been updated and re-released. Dennis Hennigan is Director of Legal and Policy Analysis at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. He's formerly the Vice President of the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. And his newly named book is called Guns Don't Kill People, People Kill People, and Other Myths About Guns and Gun Control. Welcome to the program, Dennis.
Thank you, Sonali. Good to be with you.
Thanks so much for joining us. Well, my favorite statement or assertion by the gun proliferation advocates is all you need is a good guy carrying a gun to kill the bad guy with the gun. Every time there's a mass shooting, the response is, well, if the good people were armed, the good guys were armed, they would have prevented the bad guys from killing as many people. And it's just sort of laughable because it seems as though there's this fantasy of a Western, you know, these sort of old style Westerns where everybody is well armed and a straight shot and you know, with perfect ability to kill from afar with a gun, and the person who draws their gun fastest wins, and usually it's the good guys who are going to do that. Are all of these just blatant fantasies?
Well, yes, they are. And unfortunately, they're very dangerous fantasies because they have been allowed to dominate the gun debate in this country. And they persuade far too many people that the solution to gun violence is more guns, when in fact, everything we know about guns and gun violence suggests just the opposite. If you look at the states with the highest incidence of gun ownership, those are the very states with the highest rates of gun deaths. People in those states are not safer. They're actually more exposed to violence and danger. I think the reductio ad absurdum of that argument is the notion that we should allow people on college campuses to carry guns. This is one of the great new crusades of the National Rifle Association. And it happened after the Virginia Tech massacre, when it was speculated that if just one of those students in that classroom had a gun, they could have shot back and ended the massacre. And so the NRA would allow students to carry guns in fraternity houses, to keg parties, to sporting events. They would allow the proliferation of guns on college campuses just to make it possible, in the unlikely event that there is a mass shooter on campus, for somebody to be able to shoot back, not knowing whether they would in fact hit their target at all.
Right. We know in places like Orlando, for example, that even when the police, who are well trained in the best trained people in the use of firearms, stormed the Pulse nightclub, they may have inadvertently shot some of the people who died. And so this notion that, ordinary ones among us who get some training in shooting will be better shots than the police and be able to stop the bad guys with the guns is just really, really interesting. Now, you mentioned the statistic that the states with the most guns are where we have the most gun deaths. Is the converse true? Do those states who have the strongest gun laws have the fewest gun deaths?
Yes, as a matter of fact, that is the case. It so happens that states like Hawaii and Massachusetts and New Jersey and New York, which are these are states where there are guns, but there are also very strong gun laws, and they have the lowest rates of gun deaths. Gun violence is a very complex problem. It involves not only homicides, it involves suicides and accidental shootings. But one thing is clear: where there are more guns, there are more gun deaths. Where there are weaker gun laws, there are more gun deaths. And this is also proven internationally. We see other high-income nations across the world that have strong gun laws, fewer guns, and their homicide rates are a tiny fraction of ours. So we can learn from the facts that we know, and we got to get beyond the fantasies, beyond the mythologies, to deal with real facts. And when we do, it shows us a path towards a more peaceful society.
Well, Dennis, how do you respond to the assertion that a lot of gun proliferation activists point to Chicago, one of the cities with the worst rates of homicides in the country, being a city that also has strict gun laws? How does that happen?
Well, it happens because a city like Chicago can pass as many laws as it wants, but those are applicable only within the city limits. The guns that are victimizing poor minority communities in Chicago are not coming from Chicago. They are coming from suburban Chicago gun shops, which are not governed by Chicago's gun laws. They're coming from the South. There is a well-established pattern of gun trafficking from Mississippi right up to Chicago and other cities in the upper Midwest. So all that argues that we need strong gun laws at the federal level. Cities can do what they can, states can do what they can, but guns travel very easily across state and city boundaries. That's why we need a federal solution. But as you have seen in recent history, the Congress is absolutely paralyzed by this issue, even though President Obama is trying to move them forward towards sensible gun policy.
And then the other very standard bumper sticker, which of course gives your book its name, Guns Don't Kill People, People Kill People, is based on this assumption that a criminal will acquire a gun or acquire a kind of weapon legally or illegally. They'll do what it takes to get their hands on an illegal weapon. So that in a way kind of contradicts what you were saying, when you said that gun trafficking allows people who want to get their hands on guns to get their hands on guns, and yet the same people who say a criminal will get their hands on guns any which way will want to prevent federal gun laws.
Well, I think what that argument misses is that it does make a difference what kind of weapon is in the hands of a dangerous person. Research over decades has shown that attacks with guns are 5 times more deadly than attacks with knives, for example. So guns are simply inherently more lethal, and we can see that. I mean, it's hard to imagine that Orlando killer would have been able to murder 53 people with knives or with baseball bats. Guns are especially well adapted to killing and mass killing. And so there is a difference in the type of weapon that someone uses, and that's why it makes sense to have very strong policies to keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people, much stronger policies than we might employ with respect to knives or baseball bats or some other type of weapon.
Dennis, how has the NRA and their allies made guns synonymous with freedom? It's just so bizarre that we live in a society that's supposed to be, you know, in a country, the most advanced country in the world, the richest, the most politically powerful country, and yet, you know, guns are apparently equivalent to freedom. How does that happen? How did that happen?
It is truly one of the great propaganda victories of the gun lobby. But in fact, you have to ask yourself, how free really is the ordinary American citizen when We can't send our kids to school without any assurance that they'll be safe. We can't go to a nightclub without any assurance that we'll be safe. You know, just ordinary gun violence on the streets of our cities. I say ordinary because we've become so accustomed to losing so many of our fellow citizens to street violence. The people who live in those neighborhoods do not regard themselves as free in any real sense. So, in fact, the proliferation of guns is enslaving us. It is not making us free. Mm-hmm. And we have to combat this notion that it is.
So what about this notion among people who may not ever want to own an AR-15 assault rifle, but they do want to go hunting? They've got, you know, a gun that one might consider not as lethal. And they think that, well, if you start banning AR-15s, if you start banning these military-style weapons, it's just a matter of time before Obama comes for my gun. How do you respond to that? I mean, that basically prevents us from applying any laws whatsoever.
Well, that's right. I mean, that's the classic slippery slope argument that is so important to the NRA. So you will hear it over and over again. But as you point out, if we fail to take sensible, moderate steps to keep guns out of the wrong hands because of this imagined fear that somehow down the line it's going to lead to confiscation of all guns, we are depriving ourselves of policies that can save lives. You know, the NRA used the same argument against the Brady Bill. It said, look, these background checks are just the first step on the long road to confiscation. Well, if the Congress had listened to that argument when the Brady Bill was being debated, it would have been defeated, and we would not have been able to block over 2 million prohibited gun buyers, most of them felons, from walking into gun shops and buying guns. We've been able to block those sales since Brady was enacted because we didn't listen to that NRA argument. So there's a severe social cost to listening to and crediting the slippery slope argument, and that needs to be realized. It is ridiculous that we cannot draw rational distinctions between policies like background checks, which are not threatening to law-abiding gun owners, they are not threatening to the average hunter. There's a distinction between those kinds of policies and an overall ban on all weaponry. And nobody's talking about an overall ban. They're talking about sensible measures that the NRA uses that slippery slope argument to rally gun owners in opposition to, and that needs to be overcome.
Well, frankly, and this is just my opinion, I'd be more than happy to live in a country where there was no guns at all, where nobody was allowed to own any kind of guns. Or really, you know, just the idea that we need this in our society is a sad one. But that's an aside. Let's talk about, I want to go back to this issue that guns and this myth that guns make people safer. The NRA and their advocates will often point to studies, quote unquote. Studies have shown. Are they referring in particular to one study in the 1990s that has essentially since been debunked? Can you tell us about that?
Well, there's reliance on a study done in the 1990s by a Florida State professor named Gary Kleck, which estimated that there are some 2.5 million defensive uses of guns every year. And the researchers really have had a field day over the last 20 years debunking that and actually using much more reliable crime victimization survey evidence to demonstrate that the actual number is more in the range of 50 to 60,000 a year, not 2.5 million a year, which is dwarfed by the number of times guns are used in crime. But even beyond simply counting the number of defensive uses of guns, you know, we can see that if you bring a gun into your home, the research shows you are 3 times more likely to be victimized in a homicide than if you don't. If you bring a gun into your home, it's 5 times more likely that there will be a suicide in the home. So guns in the home don't make you safer. They actually add to your risk. And we need to make the American people understand that. It may be that we want to allow individuals to make the decision whether to bring a gun into the home. I think we're a long way from having the government dictate that. But people need to be educated about the risks that they sustain by making that decision. And the NRA consistently misrepresents the evidence about the dangers of guns in the home.
Now, Dennis, very well-meaning people who may very much support laws on, to ban assault rifles, but feel because of this mythology that's been spread by the NRA that they and their house would be safer by having a gun, a small gun, say, in their house because, you know, they want to protect their family in case, they're broken into and they can confront somebody with a gun. Setting aside suicides, is there any basis to this idea that you might be able to protect your family by keeping a gun in the house?
Well, there's no question that there are situations in which people have successfully defended themselves with guns in the home. No one denies that. But you can't simply look at the instances in which guns are successfully deployed for those purposes. It is far more likely, the research shows, that your gun in your home will be used in a domestic assault, will be used in a suicide, will hurt or kill someone in an accidental shooting than it is that it will be successfully used to shoot an intruder.
That's what the numbers show. That's what the statistics show.
That's what the statistics show. So it's not a question of can guns be used in self-defense? Of course they can. The issue is what are the overall risks? You can't simply ignore the risk that gun in the home may fall into the hands of a child who may fool around with it and shoot himself or shoot his playmate. It happens all the time.
Right. And in fact, the Washington Post did an article showing that in 2015, there were more gun deaths at the hands of toddlers than terrorists. 13 toddlers inadvertently killed themselves with firearms, 18 more injured themselves, 10 injured other people, and 2 killed other people. And we hear of this all the time. We hear of people at a gun range where there's people all around, where you're surrounded by trained marksmen who inadvertently kill, their instructor or shoot themselves. I mean, it happens all the time because guns are really dangerous weapons that could go off in your hands if the safety catch isn't on, et cetera, right?
That's right. I mean, you need to be constantly vigilant around guns, and people simply make mistakes. And when they make a mistake with a gun, the result is often lethal because guns are inherently more lethal than other weapons. There was a case recently where a mother was carrying a gun around in her car, and her toddler got a hold of it in the back seat and pulled the trigger, and the bullet went right through the front seat and killed the mom. And this kind of thing happens over and over again. The problem is that people who bring a handgun into the home for self-defense are tempted to store that gun so that it's very accessible to them because they are imagining the criminal coming through the sliding glass door in the middle of the night. But if it's accessible to them, it's also accessible to their kids. It may be accessible to their depressed teenager who, in a fleeting moment of depression, may get access to a loaded gun and end his or her life. If the gun had not been there, that life would have been saved because so many of these suicidal impulses, particularly with respect to adolescents, come and go. Right. But if there's a gun there, there may be no second chance.
Right. And it's a sad statement on our society when parents really, in addition to worrying about all of the ways in which their children can be killed, putting your seatbelt on, et cetera, now really have to think about, is the person whose kid my kid has a play date with have a gun in their house? And if so, should I really send my kid over to have a play date with the other kid? I'm speaking with Dennis A. Hennigan about his new book, Guns Don't Kill People, People Kill People, and Other Myths About Guns and Gun Control. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're going to keep Dennis on for an extended conversation that you can get access to from the on-demand premium content section of our website. Dennis, the other aspect, the other myth that you debunk in your book that I think is really important is the way in which gun manufacturers, who are really the driving force behind a lot of these, you know, the sort of gridlock in Congress over gun laws, because they stand to make so much money, they don't want to be held responsible for, legally responsible for gun deaths. And one of the things that they cite is, well, you're not going to sue alcohol manufacturers when somebody dies in a drunk driving accident, therefore you cannot sue gun manufacturers. What's wrong with that argument?
Well, the gun manufacturers have been very critical of lawsuits brought against them, using analogies like that, as if the lawsuits simply argued that because guns can be used to kill people, manufacturers of guns should necessarily be legally responsible when they're used to hurt or kill people. The lawsuits that have been brought do not use such simplistic theories. Instead, they have zeroed in on a couple of issues involving choices that gun manufacturers make, which expose the public to unnecessary risks of harm. For example, in the way guns are distributed in this country, we have used crime gun trace data to establish that most of the guns that end up in the illegal market go through a very small percentage of gun dealers. Over about 60% of guns that go into the illegal market originate with about 1% of the nation's gun dealers. So this means that a huge part of the illegal market is being created by the irresponsible conduct of certain dealers. Well, guess what? The manufacturers have ways of knowing who those dealers are. They intentionally sell their guns through those dealers, and they know that those dealers' guns are being traced to crime, but because every time there's a trace of a gun to crime, the trace starts with the manufacturer. So it knows which guns it has manufactured are being used in crime. And yet the manufacturers do absolutely nothing to develop a code of conduct for those dealers, to terminate dealers who have disproportionate numbers of guns traced to crime, to do anything to ensure that they are selling through responsible dealers. And as a matter of fact, back in 2000, Smith & Wesson sought to settle a lawsuit brought against it, alleging that it had used negligent business practices, and it agreed in settlement of that lawsuit to change its business practices, to actually monitor its dealers and discipline those dealers who are irresponsible. And guess what happened? The NRA and others orchestrated a boycott of Smith & Wesson, and it almost went out of business. We have not seen any that kind of responsibility from gun manufacturers since, because the NRA sent a very, very harsh lesson. Another area is the safety of guns. There are very simple, inexpensive safety devices that could be put on guns that would reduce the risk of accidental shootings, particularly by kids. And yet only some guns have those safety mechanisms. Many manufacturers have chosen not to spend maybe 25 cents a gun to put on a magazine disconnect safety that will prevent these accidental shootings where a kid might get a hold of a semi-automatic pistol and take the ammunition magazine out, thinking the gun is unloaded, but in fact there may be a round in the chamber. And over again, that gun is fired unintentionally by the kid who thinks the gun is unloaded, and it hits and it wounds either him or it wounds a playmate. Right. The gun manufacturers know that this kind of tragedy occurs over and over again. They know that a 25-cent part could prevent these tragedies. They choose not to install that part. So these are choices that the manufacturers make to save themselves money that they know cost people's lives. And that's what those lawsuits were all about. And that's why it's terribly unfair for the Congress to have prevented victims of gun violence from bringing those kinds of lawsuits, when in fact victims of other dangerous products can pursue their legal remedies.
Yes, guns seem to be the exception to common sense in so many arenas of our society. As I mentioned the story in Cleveland, where the city is able to ban fake guns, but not real guns. Dennis, you are the director of legal and policy analysis at the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids. How much of the Big Tobacco handbook at propaganda does the gun industry use and the gun lobby use?
Well, just as the tobacco industry peddled misinformation about its products and the uses of its products for so many decades, the gun industry and the NRA do the same. And one of the objectives of my book is to try to overcome these campaigns of disinformation that have so paralyzed gun policy and that have allowed us to be governed by these myths. So there are parallels there. We were able to overcome the disinformation of the tobacco industry. It took decades to do it, but we have reached a point where we've got plummeting rates of tobacco use by kids and adults, and we're making progress. I would love to see the same kind of progress made with respect to gun violence.
Finally, is the tide turning? I mean, we feel like every time there's a mass shooting, those are the dramatic ones. Of course, the majority of shootings happen in the homes. They happen, you know, little bit by little bit, one or two here and there, every city, all over the country. But the mass shootings attract the attention, and they, really do draw attention to the horrors of gun violence. And they do seem to galvanize a little bit more public support for gun control each time they happen. Whether that's enough to overcome congressional gridlock or not is the other question. But do you feel the tide is turning? How many more people have to die before we can, you know, do something about guns?
It is very, very easy to get frustrated. It's very easy to feel hopeless. I would urge everyone to resist the temptation to feel that way. I do believe the tide is turning. It's not going to be easy. It's not going to be fast. But look at the difference politically with the Democratic Party's approach towards guns. It was not that long ago that the Democratic Party was politically fearful of even raising the gun issue. President Obama didn't even mention the gun issue after the Gabby Giffords shooting. He would offer words of condolences after a mass shooting, but he wouldn't mention the gun control issue. Well, that's all changed. It changed after Newtown. The president found his voice on guns. The Democratic Party found its voice on guns. And in fact, in the primaries, Bernie Sanders kind of took it on the chin on the gun issue because he had voted with the NRA on a number of crucial bills. So that's one very positive change. We now see a major political party very much committed to working for sensible gun laws. What needs to happen, though, is the American public needs to make this a voting issue. This needs to be important enough so that when people enter the voting booth, they will not vote for candidates who are catering to the NRA's mythology. I think that's happening. I think the cumulative impact of all of these horrible mass shootings, plus the everyday carnage that we see on the streets of our inner cities, is convincing more and more people that enough is enough. The issue is becoming more and more important to the average voter. If they make it a voting issue, the tide can be turned.
Dennis, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Good luck to you with the book.
Thank you so much for having me on.
Dennis Hennigan is the Director of Legal and Policy Analysis of the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, formerly the Vice President of the Brady Center to Prevent Gun Violence. His 2009 book, Lethal Logic, has been updated and just re-released under the title, Guns Don't Kill People, People Kill People, and Other Myths About Guns and Gun Control, that he's been discussing with us. This is Rising Up with Sonali. I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com.